is called Vyasa Puja because Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he revealed all the Vedic knowledge to us. He wrote on the Vedas, and so the seat that I'm sitting on is the Vyasa Sun. It is presented in honor of Vyasadeva and Vedic knowledge. And normally we are reading the Bhagavatam, but now we are glorifying the Bhagavata, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Bhagavan. The Bhagavatam is the jewel of all Vedic literatures, and the Bhagavat is the Supreme Personality of Servitorship. So the most confidential servitor of the Lord, the spiritual master, is very essential. Srila Prabhupada, he once was in an assembly of Indian people who were, and of course his disciples were there, and these many of them were scholars of Bhagavad Gita, so the discussion was about Bhagavad Gita. And then Srila Prabhupada asked them, what do you think, Panditji, is the most essential verse of Bhagavad Gita? And then they quoted many verses like Mamma Bhavama Bhaktu or Sarvabhama Nitya Jana. There are so many verses in the Gita which could be considered most essential. And then Srila Prabhupada said, yes, yes, yes. But then Srila Prabhupada at last said, Takvini pralipatina parivrashnina sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastatva darshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. So that is the most important thing. Even like Jesus Christ said that, you can only come to the Father through me. That principle has been there always, that like we sing every morning. We sing every morning, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada, Yasya Prasada, Nagati Kutubi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benedictions of Krishna. And without the grace of the spiritual master, no one can make any advancement. Therefore, we should always think of the spiritual master. And at least three times a day, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So that is the principle. So Srila Prabhupada has come to the Western world. He is the external representative of Krishna. He is a transparent via medium. Through him we can come to Krishna. And usually Prabhupada disciples, they can talk a lot about their personal experience. They had first-hand experience. They had some association with Srila Prabhupada. But I joined in the last year, in November 76. And in November 77, Srila Prabhupada left his body. It is incredible how much association some devotees had, you know, and they can talk about this vabu, the service of the spiritual master in his physical presence. But I never had even a second, not even a moment of a second association of Prabhupada, but still I'm his disciple. That is wonderful. So I thought, what do I have, you know, to say, to speak about? Every year the same. Oh, you were a Prabhupada disciple. Tell me something. What is your experience with Srila Prabhupada? Did you meet him? Did you see him? No. It's very painful, you know. And so what do with this thing. But there is one thing which is really personal that I have. That's my name, Guru Padma. For those who don't know me yet, I'm very proud of that name, very glad that I have that name, because it means beautiful spiritual master. Because recently I met a Prabhupada, a devotee who is a Sanskrit scholar also. And he told me, yes, Padma stands for beautiful in Sanskrit. When you add a particular word at the end, that means beautiful. It's like we sing Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya. This beautiful mouth emanates transcendental knowledge, and he fills our heart with the transcendental knowledge. Like that. So, everything about the Guru is beautiful. Padma, the lotus feet, the lotus mouth, the lotus words. And when I joined, at the beginning, when I was initiated, I was told that his name also meant, it was the name of Balaram. Balaram, he is also considered to be the Adi Guru, the original Guru. He has all the spiritual potency of Krishna, and he is also not different from Krishna. He gives the transcendental knowledge. And then he incarnates as Lord Nityananda, so Guru Padma is also the name of Nityananda, who is even more merciful than Lord Chaitanya, who is considered to be the most merciful incarnation. So there, it is a wonderful name. And I am the Das, the servant. So my name always reminds me of Prabhupada, because he is beautiful. And Vedigaya Jara Charito, the Vedic scriptures sing of his character, the character of Srila Prabhupada we can find in his books. His own books. And if you read them, we find out that he is the perfect Mahabharata personality. Beauty is not a physical thing always only, but it is also an internal thing. And that beauty, that is what devotees are attracted to. So this lotus flower, has different properties, and we can give some analogies from the lotus flower. One of the properties is that the lotus flower gives very wonderful honey. And that honey has very powerful medical power. It is said that with the honey of the lotus flower, you, with an extract of that, you can cure someone's eyes, blindness. So the blindness is cured with the nectar, the honey of the lotus flower. So this is also a fact. I was born in the deepest darkness of ignorance. I was blind, very blind, spiritually blind. But a spiritual master has been so kind that he has opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. And I offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. So that is the first thing, that the spiritual master, he can cure our blindness in this material world and enlighten us with transcendental knowledge, divya jnana, ride. He fills our heart with transcendental knowledge. And the second property of the lotus flower is that it is closed at night, and during the day, when the sun shine comes, and it opens. So similarly, when someone is very receptive and very submissive, then the mercy is there, Guru Kripa, and he opens up the Guru. That's like a lotus flower during, it opens up for the sunlight, and he will give all the transcendental knowledge. And if someone is not very receptive, then it doesn't work. Prabhupada once gave an example of a woman who was barren, you call it like that?
Barren.
And the man was very futile.
Fertile.
That's the right word, fertile. But even the man was very potent, the woman couldn't conceive a child. So it has to come from both sides. The disciples have to be qualified, and then they can receive the transcendental knowledge. So then the third property of the lotus flower is, although it grows in black mud, it always remains pure, very pure, untouched by the dirt that it comes from. Just a little bit slightly above the surface of the water. So similarly, a spiritual master, he is in the world, but he is not of the world. Oh, Jesus also said that. So he's not touched by the moments of nature. He's always pure and transcendental. Of course, we have been hearing from so many devotees. It is incredible. There is so much. Every day I learn more about Srila Prabhupada. So it's just like Nanda Shesha. He is glorifying Krishna. His qualities, names, forms, pastimes, etc. Since time immemorial, it will continue for eternity. It's unlimited. So it seems that Srila Prabhupada's glories are also like that. One friend, he just gave me a stack of CDs. He downloaded some classes from different gatherings in the world where they memorize Prabhupada. Like Shyam Sundar had so much experience, or like Harish Ori, or what is his name? Personal servant, all the personal servants. The Kirti Prabhu, yes, especially. And so many others. And then so many biographies have been written, a couple, like the Prabhupada by Satsarup Maharaj, but also Guru Prakriti Mataji wrote a very nice book with a few more confidential revelations of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes in the early days in Vrindavan. Amongst British Basis and Sadhus and their experience of Srila Prabhupada. Of course, I'm not getting too much into details. I leave that up to the other group brothers who will come after me. I don't have much time left, just a few moments. So, this is wonderful that, because Srila Prabhupada, he's called the Senapati, the general who, of the army, of Lord Chaitanya's movement to spread pure love of God, Sankirtan, the leader of the Sankirtan movement he became. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. His power. So no other Vaishnava ever did that, what he did, not even Lord Chaitanya himself. Lord Chaitanya himself spread Krishna consciousness all over India, but Srila Prabhupada brought it all over the world. So he is very, 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 very great and very, very, very special. And so I like to tell you what I tell to the visitors in Srila Prabhupada's room. And I try to say it exactly the way I present it to the visitors. And because you can imagine that a visitor comes here, just an ordinary person who never ever has heard anything about ISKCON, Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness, and then he comes here and he's overwhelmed with a lot of things to see and to hear and to smell and to taste and experience. It's a wonderful thing. And so when I go to the Prabhupada room upstairs, I tell them, yeah, I try not to say that for sure, and then I'll end my class. So they come into the room and I tell them, so this room is a especially dedicated to the founder and leader of the Hare Krishna movement, or our movement. And the Bhagavad Gita says, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, that's all the name, isn't it? But he is a great personality. So we call him Srila Prabhupada, which means that he is the great master that is very dear to us. Now, of course, usually it's not explained like that, but sometimes for the people, they can adjust the people to make it more easy. He's very, very dear to us. And then we see, there you see the stained glass window, beautifully made by some Polish artist couple. And then, but there you see a small museum, the glass, etc. So I explain a few things. And then I go through the history. There you see some photographs, and they explain the history of how Srila Prabhupada came to the West. And then I say, Srila Prabhupada, he boarded a freighter ship, the Jaladuta, in 1965, and he was already 70 years old. He was actually 69. He became 70 on board. So he was 70. And he made a journey of 32 days. And at the Arabian Sea, he got two heart attacks during a storm. He almost didn't survive it. But still, he came to New York City. And he had less than $10 in his pocket. He was already 70. He had no one to assist him. And it was the first time that he came outside of India. He was wearing his traditional clothes. What to do? Well, he lived after that for 12 more years. And in these 12 years, he traveled the globe 14 times. He opened 108 temples. He even built large temples, million projects. He had 10,000 approximately 10,000 followers, and not simply followers, but people who follow very strict principles. And he opened schools. He wrote about 80 books. He wrote 6,000 letters in these 12 years. About 6,000 letters. He started food relief. It's called food relief. Every day he gave classes in the morning, in the evening. He started the Bhaktivedanta Institute, which means that some of his followers, they were PhDs, they were scholars, scientists, and they started this institute, which is also very significant. And he inspired his followers to start farm projects, or simple living, high thinking, also opening schools. And he inspired his followers to start vegetarian restaurants. We still have many all over the world. And then I go a few more things that doesn't come to my memory. And it goes on and on and on. It's too much to mention. This is just a fraction of whatever. He inspired artists. He personally directed them how to paint the details. It's incredible. And after that, I go with him to decide where Srila Prabhupada has the microphone in front of him and the dictaphone. And then I explain to them, Srila Prabhupada got up at 1 o'clock in the night. He slept very few hours only. And in the night, he translated from the Sanskrit language and he wrote all these books. And then he started his own the book trust, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, his 80 books are translated in more than 50 languages. And in the Guinness Book of Records, it is recorded, mentioned that he distributed 469 million books in these since it comes there. And I heard that recently that it became 500 million, which is are building books. So when I tell all these things to the people, you can see they're very impressed. They're very impressed. And you say it all very quick and very clear, and they listen very carefully. And some people say, "Wow, really?" So Srila Prabhupada was always active, 24 hours a day. He always preached like that. We should be engaged in Krishna service for 24 hours a day. But actually he did. He's a acharya. He is the perfect example. But you can do that only if you are specially empowered, representative of Lord Nityananda. I think I'll stop here. Thank you very much for listening. Srila Prabhupada, Pradita Bhavana, Ki Jai! The day after Janmashtami, September 1st, 1896, in a little house in the Tali Gunj suburb of Calcutta, a male child was born. Since he was born on Nandotsava, the day after the Ashtami, the day that his father, that Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, had observed a festival in honor of Krishna's birth, the boy's uncle called him Nandalal. But his father, Gaur Mohande, and his mother, Rajani, named him Abhaychara, means one who is fearless, having taken shelter at Lord Krishna's lotus feet. In accordance with the Bengali tradition, the mother had gone to the home of her parents for the delivery. And so it was on the bank of the Ganga, a few miles from his father's home, in a small mud-walled house underneath a jackfruit tree that Abhaycharan was born. A few days later, Abhay returned with his parents to their home at 151 Harrison Road. So usually we think of Srila Prabhupada in his form as a sannyasi, aged, but here we see him as a newborn. An astrologer did a horoscope for the child, and the family was made very happy by the auspicious reading. The astrologer made a specific prediction that when the child reached the age of 70, he would cross the ocean and become a great exponent of Krishna consciousness and open many temples. According to the custom, Nanda Maharaj called for learned astrologers and Brahmins to perform the birth ceremony. birth of a child, the astrologers calculate the moment of the birth and make a horoscope of the child's future life. Another ceremony takes place after the birth of the child. The family members take baths, cleanse themselves and decorate themselves with ornaments and nice garments. Then they come before the child and the astrologer to hear the future life of the child. And the Maharaj and other members of the family dress up and sat down in front of the birthplace. All the Brahmins who were assembled on this occasion chanted auspicious mantras according to the rituals while the astrologers performed the birth ceremony. All the demigods are also worshipped on this occasion, as well as the forefathers of the family. Nanda Maharaj distributed to Brahmins 200,000 cows, which were all decorated with cloth and valuable ornaments, in garlands of peacock feathers. So the cows were dressed up just like the people. The people in the house got dressed up, and the cows got dressed up. They were very colorful gathering. Nanda gave the Brahmins not only cows in charity, but also hills of grain, decorated with ornaments and gold-bordered cloth. This picture, if you get it, hills of grain. Another translation says, mountains of sesame seeds. So they were farmers, so they had lots of grains, lots of sesame seeds. And that was their wealth. They could give that in charity to the Brahmins. So somehow or other the Brahmins would use that, they would distribute it or eat it or use it in sacrifices. And these mounds of grains were decorated also with nice colored cloth and ornaments. That was the gift of the Vaishyas to the Brahmins. In the material world, we possess riches and wealth in many ways, but sometimes not in very honest and pious ways, because that is the nature of accumulating wealth, according to the Vedic injunction. Therefore, one should purify such wealth by giving cows and gold and charity to the Brahmins. A newborn child is also purified by gifts of grains and charity to the Brahmins. In this material world, it is to be understood that we are always living in a contaminated state. We therefore have to purify the duration of our lives, our possession of wealth, and ourself. We can purify our duration of life by taking a daily bath and cleansing the body inside and outside and accepting the 10 kinds of purificatory processes by austerities, by worship of the Lord, and by distribution of charity. We can purify the possession of wealth. We can purify ourselves by studying the Vedas in order to understand the Absolute Truth and achieve self-realization. It is therefore stated in the Vedic literature that by birth everyone is born a Shudra. That by accepting the purificatory process one becomes twice born. That by studying the Vedas one becomes a Vipra, which is the preliminary qualification for becoming a Brahmin, and that when one perfectly understands the Absolute Truth,
is called a Brahman. And when the Brahman reaches for the perfection, he becomes a Vaishnava. Where the devotee of Lord Krishna. In Krishna's birth ceremony, all the assembled Brahmins began to chant the different kinds of Vedic mantras to invoke all good fortune for the child. There are different kinds of chanting known as Sutta, Magadha, Vandi, and Virudhavali. Along with this chanting of mantras and songs, bugles and kettle drums sounded outside the house. On this occasion, the joyous vibrations could be heard in all the pasture grounds and all the houses. Within and outside of the houses, there were varieties of artistic paintings done with rice pulp, and scented water was sprinkled everywhere, even on the roads and streets. Ceilings and roofs were decorated with different kinds of flags, festoons and green leaves. Gates were made of green leaves and flowers. All the cows, bulls, and calves were smeared with a mixture of oil and turmeric and painted with minerals. They wore garlands of peacock feathers and were covered with nice colored cloths and gold. When all the ecstatic countrymen heard that Nanda Maharaj, the father of Krishna, was celebrating the birth ceremony of the son, they became spontaneously joyful. They dressed themselves with very costly garments and ornamented their bodies with different kinds of earrings and necklaces and wore great turbans. After dressing themselves in this gorgeous way, they took various kinds of presentations and thus approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. All the cowherd women, as soon as they heard that Mother Yashoda had given birth, became overwhelmed with joy, and they also dressed themselves with various kinds of costly garments and ornaments and smeared scented cosmetics on their bodies. Overburdened with their heavy hips and swollen breasts, the gopis could not proceed very quickly toward the house of Nanda Maharaj, but out of ecstatic love for Krishna, they proceeded as quickly as possible. Their ears were decorated with pearl rings. Their necks were decorated with jeweled lockets. Their lips and eyes were decorated with different kinds of lipstick and ointment, and their hands were decorated with nice golden band bows. As they were hastily passing over the stone road, flowers from the flower garlands that were decorating their bodies fell to the ground, and it appeared that a shower of flowers was falling from the sky. From the movement of the different kinds of ornaments on their bodies, they were looking still more beautiful. You know, the ladies, when they wear these earrings that dangle, you know, and it looks very nice when they hold their head. In this way, they all reached the house of Nanda Yashoda and blessed the child and prayed for his protection. "Dear child, you live long just to protect us," they said. While they were blessing child Krishna in this way, they offered a mixture of turmeric powder, oil, yogurt, milk, and water. They sprinkled this mixture not only on the body of child Krishna, but on all the other persons present. There were different bands playing, bands of expert musicians. Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Lord Krishna, began to satisfy the desires of all the men assembled there. He respectfully received them and gave them in charity whatever they desired. The learned Brahmins, who had no other source of income, were completely dependent on the Vaishya community for their maintenance, and they received gifts on such festive occasions. While Nanda Maharaj was worshipping Lord Vishnu on this occasion and was trying to satisfy all the people there, his only desire was that the newborn child of Krishna would be happy. Nanda Maharaj had no knowledge that this child was the origin of Vishnu. He was praying to Lord Vishnu to protect Krishna. So this is how Prabhupada used to enjoy life, by hearing about Krishna, telling others about Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Om Shivaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namami Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasthata Deshtarani Panchakalpa Trubhischa Kripashini Vyavata Titanam Bhavani Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namonaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Ashtakami Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you, Tathagata Prabhu, for reminding us of what Srila Prabhupada has given us in terms of the vision of the spiritual life. I'd like to share some of my perceptions of Srila Prabhupada, both through his bhakti and his vani. But first, some instructions on these. In a letter to Hans Dutra on the 22nd of June 1970, Srila Prabhupada writes, "We are not separated, actually." He's talking about himself and Hans Dutra, his disciple. "There are two, Vani or Vapu. So Vapu is physical presence, and Vani is presence by the vibration, but they're all the same. So Krishna, when he was physically present before Arjuna, is the same when he is present before us by his Vani of Bhagavad Gita. So far I am concerned, I do not actually feel any separation from my spiritual master, because I am trying to serve him according to his desire. That should be the motto. If you kindly try to fulfill my mission for which you have been sent there, that will be our constant association." And further, in a letter to Tushita Krishna in Ahmedabad, written in Ahmedabad, 14th of December 1972, Srila Prabhupada also writes, "Next, you ask if I am present in my picture and form. Yes, in form as well as in teachings. To carry out the teachings of Guru is more important than to worship the form. But neither of them should be neglected. Form is called Vapu, and teachings is called Vani. Both should be worshipped. Vani is more important than Vapu, though neither should be neglected." On this basis, I'd like to share some of my perceptions of Srila Prabhupada, both through his Vapu and his Vani. I'm to some degree had a limited association with Srila Prabhupada, so some of my perceptions of Vapu, I guess, come through video and audio. Not sure what category those fall in. In a sense, perhaps Vapu. One thing that was very, in a sense, Srila Prabhupada's teachings are very important, but why is the Vapu important? That's an interesting question, really. And perhaps it's of relevance to us as well in our trying to spread Srila Prabhupada's mission to understand why Vapu is important. And Vapu is important because the spiritual master actually embodies the Vedic teachings. He exemplifies them. He lives them. We see what it's like to be Krishna conscious. And therefore there is that aspiration that we can also become, although at least we should aspire to become, though we can never become like our spiritual master, in a sense, that we aspire to have the characteristics of the spiritual master. First, the impression I had of Srila Prabhupada when I first saw him, he walked into the temple room in Bhaktivedanta Manor in the UK. One thing he had was an incredible incredible presence. We sometimes talk about that presence. It's used in the realm of acting or in teaching also. Does the teacher have a presence? And one thing that was extremely noticeable about Srila Prabhupada was he had a presence, a very powerful presence. From my first impression, probably reflective of the concerns of the early 70s, but I just thought you could drop an atom bomb and he wouldn't move. There's a lot of concern about the atomic bomb at that stage. We've got to get used to it. But really, he was Dhira, absolutely fixed. But the second thing that comes to mind and connected to this is he could also, we all had the feeling in speaking to many of those who met Srila Prabhupada, disciples or otherwise, that he could read your mind. Which for some of us is rather uncomfortable. I speak for myself. So I was always very much in awe when Srila Prabhupada was there. Once actually I was told Srila Prabhupada's gone out, we'd like you to pick up the litter from the drive. So I thought, I can't imagine Srila Prabhupada gone out in the car, don't know why. I was picking up the litter from the drive and suddenly this entourage headed by Srila Prabhupada came around the corner and it seemed a mile away. So I paid my obeisances very slowly, got up, still seemed a mile away. Srila Prabhupada came past me and he only ever said one word to me, Jai. I didn't know what it meant. But I did find out that it meant victory. So I took that as a good sign. Victory. I think the other thing that I find personally, because we all have a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada, I'm just fascinated how the different speakers today are going to speak quite differently. And that is wonderful. That diversity is great, isn't it? I just love the way it's not very predictable. You know, most people, one kind of gets an idea of their thought patterns and the way they act, and, you know, businessmen, some of you will know that you know how people act, so you can get them to buy something. But Srila Prabhupada seemed totally unpredictable. He doesn't follow the run of the mill. Particularly if we look at videos, we'll see that actually. I mean, sometimes he would tease other people, particularly ladies, he would tease them sometimes. Stories on that. And we have to be careful when he teases the ladies not to take those instructions as being kind of the same as absolute truth. But there's one case where he tells, you know, he says that a lady has a smaller brain than a man. And some people object to those, but actually, if you look at the context in which he was speaking, he was actually kind of joking, in a way. Although I'm sure there was some profound message there as well. Oh, not necessarily to do it later, don't get me wrong. And if you do get me wrong, you know what. Interesting, talking of ladies, this is a wonderful lecture. When I heard it, I was absolutely astounded. And I looked it up, and unfortunately, you said that, you can't always find everything on the database, but I managed to find this one. And Srila Prabhupada is talking in Rome in May the 28th, 1974. He's talking about fulfilling one's needs locally, how we should actually fulfill eating, our sleeping, our mating and our defending should be done locally. He's actually saying we should do those things, quite interestingly. And then he goes on, the Europeans became attracted by the beauty of Bengal. Therefore they made Calcutta their capital, the British. Yes, every European liked Bengal, every European. I met one European, German gentleman in Bombay. He was in Calcutta when I was in Bhima. So I asked him, why did you leave Calcutta? He replied, oh, I'm very sorry I left. Calcutta was so nice. And actually, where we have our temple, these quarters were known as Sahib Quarter. That's, I think, what the Indians called the white man, Sahib. Where we have got our temple, these quarters were known as Sahib Quarter. Just like our temple is Sahib Temple. So these Chowringhee and Kamak Street Park, these parks, they were all European. They liked very much to live in Bengal. And there is another story. One English officer, he became attracted by the beauty of a Bengali woman. There is a story of Bankim Chandra, and that story is called Chandrasekhar. The man was after that woman, how to get her. That is the subject matter of the story. He was attracted by the black eyes and black hair, Bengali beauty. Imagine I'm listening to this. Yogeshwara. Krishna has black hair too. Prabhupada. Why do you bring Krishna here? This is sense gratification. Just listening to this, I was astounded at the sense of humor. And also, he wasn't afraid to talk of those things. Interesting. Not kind of puritanical. You know, Puritans? There was a particular approach where they were very much against sense gratification. It is said, there's one person observed that the Puritans, they left England to set up America. Sorry, no further comment. It is said when they objected to bear, they had the sport of bear baiting, a horrible sport, of course, bear baiting, where they set dogs on bears. But anyway, the point is that he said that the Puritans objected to bear baiting, not because the animal was suffering, but because other people were enjoying it. We should also be careful not to become resentful if we see some people enjoying. That's not our business. Of course, we understand the standards of enjoyment. But it's mentioned that the sannyasi, he rejoices in the prosperity of others. And we've heard about the prosperous life of Tapadit Prabhu. That is fine. Of course, then Srila Prabhupada goes on. But that is very good, that even in talking this material, you remember Krishna. That is very good. You remember Krishna when a child is playing? If you remember Krishna's childhood, that is very good. Somewhere or other, if you get the chance of remembering Krishna, that is advancement. So Srila Prabhupada was rather unpredictable in his behavior, being transcendental, not controlled by the modes of nature, not pushed by those modes to act in a particular way, then he's free. He's also not concerned for public opinion. I mean, that's one thing that really impressed me. I mean, many religious leaders I found sounded very much like politicians. And I had the opportunity in 1973 at the installation of Shishi Radha Gokulananda to actually hear Srila Prabhupada speak and to hear the High Commissioner of India speak at the same time. Okay, by normal standards, a good speech. At the same time, I noticed the difference in quality between the talk of one who's a politician and the one who's a sadhu. And regrettably, sometimes we hear our religious leaders seem to be catering to public opinion. But Srila Prabhupada was not afraid. He was also diplomatic and tactful when needed, but also he could speak the truth. That's the sign of a sadhu. But that's one thing that personally attracted me to Srila Prabhupada. Also, he was a very full person, not a scrawny, dry, empty renunciation. Sometimes we meet renunciants who feel a little empty, in a sense. I get that impression anyway. But Srila Prabhupada has this feeling of Purnima, completeness there. And one thing that I've been meditating on recently, looking at the videos of Srila Prabhupada, is that he had a very vibrant inner life, extremely vibrant, almost turbulent sometimes, it seems, the inner life. In other words, that of course there is that tranquility, because Srila Prabhupada is dearer. But at the same time, it's not a sleepy peacefulness. And as some of us probably as devotees, we perhaps those times we glimpse a little bit of the transcendental platform, we realize that real peacefulness, that there's a certain life there. We become alive. And Srila Prabhupada endorses this in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, verse 76. The understanding of Bhagavad Gita is so transcendental that anyone who becomes conversant with the topics of Arjuna and Krishna becomes righteous, and he or she cannot forget such talks. This is the transcendental position of spiritual life. In other words, what appears to eat from the right source, directly from Krishna, attains full Krishna consciousness. The result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Interesting. It's not easy to understand what this Krishna consciousness is, actually. And actually what is fascinating is how much in one academic, I've got his name now, but he noted how Srila Prabhupada was a singular person with a particular character and so on, personality, and yet he is also a representative of some universal teachings.
Harvey Cox,
Professor Harvey Cox made that observation. Very interesting observation, how we remain individuals. We don't sacrifice our individuality. Sometimes at the beginning of spiritual life there's a tendency to do that. Naturally. Perhaps we want to. But that's not the perfection of life. We keep everything as human beings. And we're Krishna conscious as well. How we understand this, I don't know. But there's something very refreshing about this. At least that's how I find it. Regarding the Vani of Srila Prabhupada, I'll move on. One observation is that despite him having some liking for Bengal, naturally, he always maintains a universal perspective. I personally can never find a hint that actually he is sectarian in any way. This is always so universal. Always stressing that platform, the universal, the ideal, but at the same time acknowledging sometimes this world. I'm born in Bengal, so. He even says in one place, I meet someone, he says, where are you from? I'm from India too. So he kind of acknowledges that we may have a context in which we live as jivas because we're limited.